Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
How many lives do you suppose you've saved in your medical career?
What has that got to do with anything?
Hundreds? Thousands? Do you suppose those people give a damn that you lied to get into Starfleet Medical? I doubt it. We deal with threats to the Federation that jeopardize its very survival. If you knew how many lives we've saved, I think you'd agree that the ends do justify the means. I'm not afraid of bending the rules every once in a while if the situation warrants it. And I don't think you are either.
You've got the wrong man, Sloan.
I don't think so. In time, he'll come to agree with me.
Don't hold your breath.
All I ask is that when you get back to Deep Space Nine, you consider what I've said.
What if I decide to expose you?
Let's just say I'm not going to lose any sleep over it.
Are we going to get started? Like, what are we doing?
I don't know.
I'm ready to go.
I'm
ready to go. All right.
Ready to go.
You look ready because you're standing.
I'm ready to go.
All right. I'm going to push the button here.
I guess I didn't know.
All right. Jesse said he was ready to go. Dan said he was ready to go. So I have started the podcast.
Have you ever seen Dan sneeze before?
What do you mean?
You know.
I've never seen you sneeze before.
That's a sneeze all the time.
Well, Jesse sneezes all the time.
I sneeze all the time, and I sneeze like 10 times.
He's Mr. Sneeze.
No, it's because I have self-control, and I can like stop it from coming when I'm in public.
Yeah. That's got to be what it is.
Yeah.
Jesse's probably going to be sneezing sometime tonight during this podcast.
Yeah, I just hold it in. I hold it in.
Wow. Anyway, guys, the clock has started. We have started the podcast.
I will say, Jesse, that your situation is a little different because I don't usually sneeze like 10 times in a row. So you have a different thing.
I'm
going
a
on.
Sneezy guy.
He is a sneezy guy.
Sneezy time guy.
Anyway, Dan, you were saying something about me standing up. Is that going to be a problem?
I don't know why you're doing it.
I'm giving it a try.
Why?
I'm trying out this whole podcasting while standing up thing.
No, yeah, I think you're just trying to fuck with me.
I'm not trying. Why would you think I'm trying to fuck with you specifically?
Because you noticed that it's distracting me.
I didn't notice it was distracting you. You pretty much stated that.
And that's when you decided to keep standing up. See, I think you were standing up briefly and then we're about to sit down, but I was like, what's going on with that standing?
Nah.
And then you were just like, haha, I'm going to keep doing this.
No, it's like a thing.
Dan.
People stand up while broadcasting. No, it's good for the lungs, for the diaphragm.
Okay, you've never done that. You've never done that before, and you also didn't warn me that you were going to do it.
Oklahoma, is he throwing you off, man?
Sweeping down the plains,
right?
Oklahoma, where the waving wheat can sure smell sweet.
Right, I'm just going to sit quietly until our shit gets back into place.
All right, anyway. I thought I'd try standing up for a bit. Maybe I'll sit down.
Oh, no. I just wish you would have warned me.
Okay, I do apologize. You're right.
I deserve to know.
It was sort of an ad hoc last minute decision.
Well, you can't just like throw shit in there without letting people you work with know.
I'm apologizing because
you gotta
right.
give them a heads up. I'm
it
gonna
sort
stand
of happened
up there.
Naturally because I was just adjusting things.
There's certain things.
This is kind of fun.
There's certain things that I need to be able to count on in order to do what I'm supposed to do.
Oh okay. My goodness,
I respect that. All right, hello everyone, and welcome to. Man, this is weird. Standing up. All right, I'm gonna give it the good college try. All right, I'm standing up. It's giving me a lot more physical ability to move, and I'm a fidgety guy, so I'm being a little extra wiggly during this introduction.
It's like you're
so.
The conductor.
Yeah, well, except I'm conducting what? Conducting a bottle of Mexican coffee tequila.
Oh, no.
That's what I got in front of me. Anyway.
Bottle in front of me.
Okay, yeah. Let's get moving here. Hello, and welcome to the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Well,
damn lights!
We keep a low profile.
I had like some like sustain that damn right. Can you play that again?
Damn right!
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, that's the part just the movie, baby.
Yeah.
I said baby. That was weird.
baby.
You can call me baby. I'm okay with that.
Hey, baby,
I
baby.
Say that sometimes.
Hey, baby, baby. When'd you call me baby? You never call me baby.
I went through a phase, Jesse, where I was saying baby.
Why don't you call me baby, Jesse? You need
I
to call
you
me baby.
Baby.
Why don't you call your baby your baby?
Well, he might call his baby.
That makes me uncomfortable.
Because he has like an actual baby.
But I'm his babies. Figurative baby.
you're a lot of people's figurative baby. All right. So welcome to the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Yes.
This is episode 278.
Actually, when I first came in here, I half suspected that I would be interrogated under a very bright light.
Okay. Well, there you go. It's episode 278.
That's how I feel about whenever I do the episodes of podcasts.
Just every episode of the podcast.
He's always
bright
on his
light.
Guard,
yeah.
We're gonna get him.
All right. Yes. So yes. And as you can probably gather from Dan's sound clips as well as from the title of the episode when you clicked on it, most likely. We are going to be discussing Star Trek Deep Space Nine's sixth season episode, 18th episode of the sixth season.
That's correct.
Inquisition.
I think it's obvious.
Okay.
That was a disaster.
No, it's all right.
It
we're just getting
cool,
started. Yeah. I'm throwing you off because I'm standing up here and I'm being all wiggly and fidgety.
Correct.
Yeah,
Mr. Wiggly Worms.
Yeah. This week we're going to talk about Inquisition. But first, a couple things to go over. A reminder that if you leave us a review, we don't want to leave you hanging with nothing. There can be a bit of a quid pro quo here. So what we offer to all our listeners, we offer to the listeners who leave a review and let us know about it, Dan is going to write you a custom haiku and read
fascinating
it, yes,
stuff.
And read it and read it on the air. So that is a reward you can get for writing a review.
I'm afraid so.
And we've got a couple of voicemails this week. So let's get to those voicemails.
That's a very good sign.
It is indeed. So the first voicemail is from our old friend, Jesse. Not this Jesse.
No,
and not that Jesse.
I'm not their friend.
But Jesse.
Yes.
Hey, guys. It is Jesse from Crusher Convo. And tonight, I just taped my season 3 premiere with Lori from Trek Movie about Bride of Chaotica and Holodeck Fun. Now, her favorite holodeck episode is The Killing Game, which you guys just talked about last week. And I was curious about something. If you guys got to go into any holodeck program, what would it be? For me, it would be April 15th, 1947, when Jackie Robinson walked on Ebbets Field as the first Black Major League Baseball player. Huge fan of Jackie and the Dodgers, and I know that that day was epic. Which I will be honoring Jackie this season, so stay tuned. But I can't wait to hear your thoughts. And as always, live long and prosper.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jesse. So I think that's, first of all, I think that's a great question. We'll get to the holodeck.
For real.
Holodeck question in a second. Although it's also funny because when I first heard her ask
holograms,
which holodeck program we want to go into, I was immediately thinking of, like, you know, the stupid Star Trek ones, and she busts out with witnessing a historic moment in civil rights.
For real.
I was thinking more along the lines of going to Quark's holosuites, getting involved in one of those spy programs of Julian's, something along those lines. All right, so getting to Jesse's question. If you all could go into a holodeck program, what would you be aiming for?
Well, it has to be nonfiction.
No, I think it could be anything. My understanding is it could be anything. You could have anything in the holodeck. Remember, it's the holodeck. And one complaint I think all of us have voiced in the past is that, understandably, is related to production constraints. But they have a holodeck that can produce anything, and it's often very banal. It's like, let's go to the beach, as opposed to, like, let's go to a world where everything's a hamster.
Well,
and everything's
dragon,
just touching me.
Dragon riding. And, how about dragon riding?
Oh, Jesse's into the dragon riding.
Speaking of Voyager holodecks, back when they went with the Hirogen, remember that whole holodeck episode with the Nazis?
That's what we're referring
That's
to. The killing.
Talk about dog.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That one.
Yeah, that was literally just last week.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know. Yeah,
yeah. But the way you've the tone you're using and the phraseology you're using is suggesting, like, something much further back, like when Jesse and I discussed Fairhaven and Spirit.
I see. Yeah.
They introduced a new bit of lore, I think, in that it requires more processing power to have a larger holodeck space. Yeah. Now, that makes sense. Like, the more shit you make, the more power you need. But they never introduced it like that previously. Previously, the holodeck... See, one time, I think Patrick thought that they ran on conveyor belts. I think that's what you suggested once, Patrick, because you thought it ran on conveyor belts.
Well, okay, can I clarify? I probably argued that a conveyor belt or something similar was a component of the holodeck. Not that holodecks run
like there's a hamster, like, you know, speaking of hamsters, not like there's a hamster in a hamster wheel. I'm just
there's
saying
probably
like,
some molecular like quantum tickles. Wheel. It like quantum wiggles your
feet. I think that it all still happens fully in the mind, but whatever, that's not even the point. Point is
that would be
is
the
that
easier
like,
solution.
Is that like I didn't ever consider that there was a limit to how big a holodeck could be, but apparently there is.
Well, all right, so taking those limits aside, if you could just go into a regular old holodeck, let's say holodeck 3.
Well, okay, what about like if I my wish is I my wish my holodeck takes me to a place where I have a holodeck. That's like wishing for more wishes, right?
You want your holodeck to give you another holodeck?
Ooh. Yeah.
All right. Is that like Inception?
Oh, holoception? No, what would I don't know, but it would involve a house with a room of infinite hamburgers.
Wow, dude.
Like where I could just reach in and pull out a hamburger.
Cheeseburger? That's
cheeseburger. Sure, any kind of hamburger I want
any
at that
kind of,
moment.
Any kind of burger.
I just reach in and there's a room and I look in the room.
Salsa
and
burger.
And it's filled with burgers. I can see it's just filled to the brim with burgers, but it never ends and I can keep grabbing a burger and I always
burger
grab exactly
choice,
the burger.
Exactly the right one.
The one that I want. Exactly. Even if I don't know which one I want, my subliminal subconscious
sushi
mind
burger.
Tells me.
I think that sounds like a rad idea.
Then I'd want another room that was a gateway into the dinosaur times.
Yeah.
Okay, you're getting greedy here.
I think I am getting a little greedy.
Jesse, very very explicitly stated you could just go to the one.
Okay, fine.
So you
I think hamburgers
you created
over
a holodeck with multiple holodecks. Yeah. Well, with one.
Okay, if I had to choose one, I'd pick the hamburger room over the dinosaur room.
And Jesse, are you down with the dragon riding or something similar?
Something like that.
Dragon riding's not too far off.
Infinite skies.
From dinosaurs.
I think, you know what, honestly, I'd like to have magical powers. That's what I want. I want to be a wizard.
Hell yeah, dude.
Wizard shit.
I was going to go along the lines of...
Fuck that burger shit.
I'm
I'd only do the burger shit if I never gained any weight from eating them. And
you could have magical powers and still have the burger.
The holodeck can beam the food out.
Yeah, so I don't get fat. So that's how I purge, through the holodeck. Okay, I'm done for real.
Okay, well, what I would do, I'm split because I would either want some kind of crazy world that was all soft, fuzzy animals like hamsters or mice or something that you could just like roll around in and without hurting them and everything's just wiggling all over you.
Whatever you say. Huh?
But that I could see that getting boring at some point, so... I would also be into sort of a Dungeons and Dragons type land where you go around and have adventures and pick different skills and kind of like a real life video game action. Mm-hmm. So yeah, living in some like super cool, awesome D&D type world would be cool.
I can understand that.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Jesse. That was an excellent question.
Thank you.
And people should head over to the Crusher Convo podcast and check out all sorts of awesome stuff. No doubt in store in this coming season of the Crusher Convo podcast.
Yes. 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 Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Correct.
All right. And now we have a voicemail from our old friend Isaac.
Isaac.
From Tasmania.
Exactly.
Hi, guys. Isaac here from the Trek 365 podcast. Wishing you all a very happy holograms.
Holograms?
Anyway, in the last podcast that you guys released, sensational effort, by the way, by all, but Dan called out that he felt like he was a bit picked on by Jesse and Patrick and perhaps they had it in for him kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's paraphrasing. It's not exactly what he said. But I listened with an impartial ear and I have to say, Dan 100% calls it how it is.
Yep.
These guys have it in for you, buddy.
They do. I knew it.
Do with that what you like. Maybe you want to glare at them. Maybe even think some mean things. That
exactly.
will really show them. But, yeah, just wanted to call it out. The other thing I wanted to mention in passing is Patrick just said, but we're doing Inquisition next week. And I assume, like, I'm adding me in that, like, we, the four of us, are doing Inquisition by DS9. I'm just about to pop it on and see what it's about. Anyway, that's moving away from the algorithm. So I actually developed an algorithm and put the transcript from your last episode in. It suggested that we do past tense this week.
Yeah,
I ignored that, went to the next one. So this week we're going to actually do Inquisition from
DS9. He's clever.
So that's what the algorithm says this week. All right, let's go watch it, and then we can go chat about it. I hope you guys are having a good week, and can't wait to hear from you guys next time on It's Got Star Trek.
Thank you.
It takes exceptional people to do what we do.
Indeed. Well,
thank you for your cooperation.
Thank you, Isaac.
Thank you for your cooperation.
Thanks, Agamemnon.
I can confirm on behalf of myself and Jesse that yes, indeed, we are out to get Dan.
Yeah, I knew it.
You're smarter than the rest of us, don't you?
We kept that secret from Dan, but we realized it's more fun if we're just overt about it.
You have no right to do this, Sloan.
Sloan. You have no right to do this, Sloan.
You have no right to do this, Sloan.
And, a programming note about the algorithm. Longtime listeners will know that normally we rely on Dan's custom algorithm, that what he does is he takes a transcript from the previous, like one of the previous episodes of It's Got Star Trek.
Meaning what?
Uses that transcript, analyzes it with some sort of algorithm.
What?
And then it spits out a list.
It tells us to watch past tense.
It spits out an ordered list of the next episodes that we're supposed to watch.
Why did you do it, Julian?
And it does often suggest we watch Star Trek's past tense.
You're absolutely sure about
Star Trek
that.
DJ's part 9, two. Which we've already done, both parts 1 and part 2 of past tense, long ago.
Way before the algorithm.
Yeah.
What
so,
did they want?
We have not abandoned Dan's algorithm. Not at all.
No.
However.
No. No.
No.
No.
No. Don't.
No. I don't think so.
No. No.
No.
No.
No, we haven't. We'll get back to it.
There are a lot of yeses and noes in this episode, by the way.
Dan, that's another thing, you know, longtime listeners will know. Dan likes to tally up the yeses, noes, and you have a whole spectrum of positive to negative words, right? And a color coding. Don't answer that. You do. We'll stipulate.
It goes from.
You don't have to answer.
And the order is positive to negative. It starts with it, and then they, and then I, and then you, and then it bookends with yeses and noes on either end of the whole thing.
Got it.
Then there's questions.
I know.
And then there's beginning starts with I'm sorry's and apology and thank yous, and then openings, and at the end are closings. Yeah, I could make a whole diagram showing you. Exactly.
I agree.
And it kind of evolves over time.
I admit my error in bringing it up. It was not necessary.
I don't.
That's correct.
I know that you were compelled to explain it in more detail.
Make it sound so ominous.
No, the algorithm. For no reason in particular, lately we've just decided it would be fun to focus on episodes that, explore the moral and practical dimensions about combating oppressive governments.
Yes.
So the algorithm picked The City on the Edge of Forever for us, and that was something about how thinking about or pondering the question of whether it is okay to sacrifice an innocent life in order to avoid a slide into fascism. That was
the ends do justify the means.
Last week, of course, we did The Killing Game in Voyager, which talks about sort of the value of resistance against oppressive regimes.
The ends don't always justify the means.
No matter what the issues are. This week, of course, we will eventually, shortly, get to discussing Inquisition.
It's around me.
Afraid so.
Which Inquisition is very interesting because one of the things that it posits is that there is this shadowy secret organization, sort of an X-Files style organization. However, there's always been that little bit of a tug of war between the idea of like how awful it is to have an organization that doesn't report to anybody. But then there's always that little bit of hope that that's the organization that's actually going to save you from the people who are trying to tear down your shit. It could, right?
For real.
It's an interesting discussion, which we will eventually get to. But anyway, so that's what we've been doing. And by the way, heads up, next
Not
week.
Not a new technique, heads up.
Next week, we're going to discuss.
An effective one, nonetheless.
We're going to discuss TNG's The Drumhead.
You're absolutely sure about that.
Kind of keeping with the theme for the time being. But anyway.
You have a problem with that?
We'll get back to the algorithm in not too long.
But what does that say about us?
Thank you, Isaac, as always, for your call. And folks, definitely head over to Trek 365. It's a fantastic daily podcast. It's coming out every day. Isn't that crazy? It's only 365 seconds long. What's that? That's like 6 minutes and 6 seconds, 6 minutes, 7 seconds, something like that.
You're joking.
I'm not.
Oh, wow.
Go check it out. And while you're at
whatever you say,
go check out Open Pike Night. Oh, by the way, Green Shirt, which is an excellent podcast, like the premier podcast about TNG.
For real.
One of the hosts, Cameron, never had seen TNG, and so he was a Green Shirt, and he watched all of TNG. Now they're just doing, they're just about to do All Good Things. So he a Green Shirt no longer. right now he can, I don't know what color shirt he'll have, and hopefully they'll keep doing some awesome stuff because it's a fantastic podcast. So go check out the the podcast is not ending, but you know, they've finished covering TNG.
Wow, dude. Yeah.
For real.
I know,
right? We haven't even done that for real.
I know. There's so much, for real. So much awesome stuff going out there in podcast land. All right. Well, back to this podcast. Back to the It's Got Star Trek podcast. That's us.
It's got it.
I think it's obvious.
I think that's all the front matter. I think we can just dive into our discussion. I'm sorry, did that creep out Dan?
Creep Jesse out a little bit more, I think. The front matter. I think because he was thinking about how I was creeped out.
You know, no, it's because Jesse doesn't like when I say front matter. Dan, you don't like when I say back matter, isn't it?
No,
isn't,
it's, I don't like, no, I don't
you
like,
don't like
I say,
either.
I don't know. I don't like front matter. Remember, it was me who complained about the front matter.
I don't think I really have a problem.
I don't think Jesse
with
did. I told you because it makes me think about frontward facing farts, like, you know.
In time, you'll come to agree with me.
All right. Inquisition. Let's get started. Inquisition, directed by Michael Dorn.
Yes.
Yeah, man.
And Worf had two lines. He had this.
Where's the captain?
And he also had this.
You have run out of excuses, Doctor.
Those were his two lines.
Yeah. And he didn't once complain about how he didn't get his cock.
Yeah.
I know, right? That was fucked up.
Well, because
that was like the most horrifying up you could get in your meals. Get gawk instead of
it was just too early for gawk. He would have eaten it later.
Which is just a reminder.
I think he was joking. I don't think Bashir likes gawk.
Just a reminder, there was no Worf. Worf did not get his gawk because that was all a fabrication.
Yeah, that was all of him fucking with him.
Totally.
Yeah. All right. So
make him hungry.
This is, I think most people might agree, a fairly classic Deep Space Nine episode. It is where we are introduced to the idea of Section 31, which is, you know, just from a lore perspective, that's interesting. But I've always really enjoyed this episode.
Yeah.
I love episodes that are weird and you don't know what's going on, kind of like Whispers with O'Brien on DS9, where he's like, you know, there's some shame.
Chief O'Brien?
We covered Whispers long ago. That type of thing where you're just sort of unnerved and you're like, what's going on? And
because Sloan kept switching up his tactics all over the place to throw him off kilter. Yeah. And there's one other thing in this episode that they don't really talk about so much, but it's this, how tragic it is, Bashir's position, what a tragic position he's in. And a lot of people are in when they're the subject of trauma, because as soon as you get at the subject of trauma, you're on suspicion. Oftentimes you're on suspicion by everyone else because they're like, uh-oh, he got this happened to him. Is he going to do it to other people now? You know, and
you're referring to being taken prisoner and being accused
prisoner.
Of, since he was taken prisoner, that he that's somehow a reason to suspect that he's become a traitor.
Right, exactly.
That's mafia shit.
And you can take it. You can also take it to day-to-day examples, like if as a child you were abused as a child, people are worried, now they have a higher likelihood of abuse. Jobs straight up teach you to be careful of outsiders. You know, they say, watch about that guy who looks, unsatisfied. And like in
you're talking about like if you're like at a retail establishment or something like that? Or
I'm just talking about any, like if you're at an office building? Office job that has sensitive information or whatever. Like, and like they say, like, you know, they say like, watch out for people who like look.
Watch out.
With that look,
if you see something, say something.
Watch out for people that look disgruntled or whatever. And like, think about how in school the outsider gets picked on, and like people are like, "Why is he such a loser?" And it's like, you know, if you took the time to like think about like how that person feels, they don't want to be that way. So they're already in a position of feeling like an outsider, feeling like they're picked on, feeling like they don't know how to communicate. And instead of people trying to like help them along, they push them further away, and they get on both sides. And so it's just totally something like a situation happening to you, and from there cascading a whole sequence of events that are out of your control, and it's like each side gets more and more suspicious. And that's like, that's a shitty position Bashir had to be in, you know? It's like, after all that trauma, to be fucking lied, told you're a liar.
And taking aside the ultimate purpose, which once it's revealed retroactively,
just messing with that guy.
You know, all this stuff makes more sense. But I think part of the brilliance of this episode about how it's structured is that the whole time it's happening, we really aren't thinking this is not happening, right? Mm-hmm. This is a holodeck ruse or whatever, right? They did a good job of everything being a believable march towards being railroaded. And because of the injustice that we feel to our boy Bashir, we really sympathize with him. But I don't know about you guys, that part in the episode when Sisko is kind of like, maybe, you know, fake Sisko is like, you're not lying, but maybe you are compromised. I think the audience at that stage is also supposed to be like, oh, wait, I mean, I sympathize with Sisko too. It's Star Trek. Right. It is. We've saw Geordi be brainwashed into being an assassin without knowing it by the Klingons and Romulans.
The minute Sisko was like, "No more excuses, Doctor," I knew something was. That was the time. But up until then, I didn't know. And I'm actually kind of ashamed to say that I didn't realize the whole episode was a hologram, even after
holograms?
They showed the hologram. I thought just the part where he got transported to the Dominion ship. Yeah. I thought that was just a hologram. And then at the end, when they're like. They timed it well because it was when he was supposed to go to his conference and we never knew he was gone. I was like, oh, he was transported the entire episode. I thought it was just that last part when in the Dominion ship. So I felt a little silly there, but I could tell.
When did you figure it out? So you said you didn't figure it out immediately. Did you figure it out before the end of the episode?
As soon as they said, and the Dominion were smart because the Sloan was smart because he transported Bashir out. At the same time, he went to the conference, so we never knew he was
Everyone
gone.
Everyone was expecting him to get on that early morning shuttle.
See, yeah, I thought he's... and then, like, I don't know... I didn't put it together, because I was slow, but I did eventually piece it together when they spelled it out for me, but I knew something was wrong with that Sisko! I knew something was wrong with that Sisko!
Yeah, well, the Sisko, they didn't call out Jadzia, but Jadzia also was reacting. Like, Worf, you could buy Worf immediately being like, fuck you, you're a piece of shit.
Why did you do it, Julian?
That one is, like, so hard to believe.
Yeah.
Why did you do it, Julian?
And especially like Worf already is not always a big fan of Julian to begin with.
Yeah, he eats worms.
That sounds like a cover up to me.
Well, okay, so it's directed by Michael Dorn.
Eats worms.
And so we start out with Bashir all being all pert. Is that a good
pert?
Term?
Pert? That's, no, perky? Your butt is pert.
Your
is
butt
that like
is,
a firm
your butt,
butt
is pert.
My butt is not currently so pert. I don't know if it means firm.
I think it means something slightly different. I don't think it means...
It sounds dirty.
I think it's...
How about this? You look up the word pert, and I'll come up with other adjectives.
What
sparkly?
He's
a little sparkly.
What is a pert butt?
He's all staying up late, and he's all and Odo's all
yeah,
like,
okay.
Your doctors all like to go have
okay,
fun.
Okay, this is the AI saying this, not me.
Okay.
A pert butt is a round and firm buttocks. The term has become popularized by the Kardashians.
Wait,
what?
That AI said that.
Now, did you look up pert butt?
I said, what is a pert butt?
Okay, I'm just look up the word fucking pert.
No.
I did not say that Bashir had a pert butt.
You went one step beyond.
You said you had a pert butt.
No, I said I didn't. First of all, please. Okay. We'll get back to Star Trek.
Am I gaslighting you now?
Yes.
There's like Sisko and Sloan gaslighting Bashir. Am I gaslighting you?
Look. So
that was my plan all along.
I said Bashir was a pert Bashir. I didn't say butt. I just said a pert Bashir. Then you said something about a pert butt. And then I said, I don't have a pert butt. I need to work on that.
Okay.
And then you looked up pert butt instead of just pert for some reason. And it's about something about the Cardassians.
This guy's got to work on his butt.
It's an adjective. There's two definitions right away from Google. The first one in parentheses says, of a girl or young woman, attractively lively or cheeky. A number
cheeky.
I don't know why that applies only to women. I would apply it to Bashir.
Yeah.
Number two in parentheses, of a bodily feature or garment, attractive because neat and jaunty.
Neat and jaunty.
So the first example is a pert Belgian actress. That doesn't really. That's a terrible example sentence. But
sounds like.
Is that making a comment about Belgian people?
Is that a beginning of a joke?
I know, right?
A pert Belgian.
She had a pert nose and deep blue eyes. None of these are very good fucking sentences.
All right. Well, pert or otherwise, sparkly, whatever adjective you want to use for.
And it's also
Bashir.
Known.
He's excited.
And it's also known as the program evaluation and review technique. It's a statistical tool used in project management.
I don't use that.
Maybe that's what I meant.
Yeah, maybe.
What does
pursed breast mean?
Pert breast? You said pursed breast.
Pert breast. That's what it says in the People Also Ask section of Google. It says, what does pert breast mean?
I'm sure they
pert
do.
Pert breasts may refer to breasts that are firm and not sagging or to a woman who is lively and forward.
The breasts. You got the pert breasts. It's ridiculous.
I thought it was perky. Okay, I don't want to get... This conversation's grossing me out. I'm starting to get a little grossed out.
Bashir was a little perky. He was a little perky.
I think we can say that with safety.
Try Pert Plus.
No.
No?
I will not.
Do you like Prel instead?
Nice.
Fuck Prel. Head and shoulders all the way.
Yeah.
Head and shoulders.
But
coconut,
then you have to admit to people
style.
Then you have to admit to people you have dry skin.
Yeah, what are you
gonna do?
Yeah, man, it's dry guy.
I don't like that almond smelling shit because it smells weird.
I like the coconut shit.
Yeah, coconut's pretty good.
Makes
but
me think
almonds...
I'm at the beach.
The bitch.
The beach. So you know you don't have to get the almond smelling shit.
I think it's obvious.
Which are you talking?
Head and Shoulders.
Oh, Head and Shoulders.
Remember Selsun Blue?
Selsun Blue is all right.
Remember, he's like, but you don't have dandruff. And he goes,
exactly.
That's right.
All right. Casperia Prime is the planet he's going to, which is a fun resort planet, probably better than Ryza. I get the impression Ryza's a little bit low rent. Not that it's cheap. I'm not saying it's cheap.
Because Odo was like annoyed or something.
I think Ryza's like Atlantic City.
I thought
Xperia Prime is probably a little bit more upscale.
Like Vegas.
Yeah.
Or like the nicer hotels in Vegas.
Yeah, what was up with Odo at the beginning? Like, this is Odo like being like totally fucking smug and like and judgy and just full of himself. It's this, he goes,
"Where is it? Ryza? Casperia Prime? Well, doctors always hold their conferences at sunny resorts."
Which is true, by the way.
"But don't forget to take plenty of sunscreen."
Because they have money.
"Oh, let me guess. You dislocated your shoulder."
And it ends on the most fuck you of all.
Well,
you know. "Oh, let me guess. You dislocated your shoulder."
Yeah. Let me guess.
Why was he such a fucking, like a fucking dude, man?
I couldn't tell you, man.
And I mean, is it him being grumpy? Is it him being judgy? Is it him being like smug, or is it all of them
all
at once?
I think
he's annoyed that we haven't gone to break.
It's a perfect Odo.
Past our break.
Patrick is Odo. 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 Odo, yeah.
You gotta hush.
I want to eat some of this Patrick risotto. All right. We will be right back.
Looks like you're going on a little vacation after all.
I'm afraid we're going to have to continue your debriefing later.
All right, shall we do some podcasting? What do you think?
Let's do it, bitch.
Bitch.
Get all the bitches out of your
system.
Listen, bitch.
Listen, bitch. And I said, bitch. You said bitch, though, right?
Okay. All right, calm down, fellas. Let me push the button here. Thank you. I'm going to push the button. Cut out all that nonsense, and now we're back to the podcast.
We're nerds now.
We have returned. Play a clip if you want, if you have a return clip.
Hologram. Well, I thought you were supposed to say welcome back.
Welcome back!
Am I glad to see you?
What were we talking about before
by the way,
the break?
Real quick, by the way. I don't
this
usually,
better be quick. I've got a shuttle to catch.
You tricked me because I don't usually say welcome back. I usually say like we're back or some combination, some variation.
You said welcome.
Am I glad to see you?
How about let's try again. I will say we're back, but not that doesn't count. That's just me saying I'm going to say it. And then I'll say it in an exuberant way, and then you can play the sound. How about that?
I'm confused.
We're back.
This better be quick. I've got a shuttle to catch.
I'm in your blood.
Is that what you played when we got back from break? Or that was a different one?
Am I glad to see you?
There you go. All
right, I played them both, but you only heard it one of them because you were in Patrick.
So that's the one you got to play. So I'll do it again. All right. We're back!
Am I glad to see you?
There we go. Yeah, that works.
This better be quick. I've got a shuttle to catch.
Okay. All right.
Exactly.
So Jesse was
Cheers.
Asking.
Look at how. Wait, listen.
What we were talking about before the break? I don't remember. There was a bunch of nonsense happened during
the
break.
I think there's something weird going on with the sound here.
Cheers.
It sounds like it's echoing or vibrating.
Cheers.
It sounds like it's like cheers.
Do you remember when
cheers.
We did a glitch in the hologram?
When we did City on the Edge of Forever, you played a clip that sounded like Spock was talking with another person.
Yes. Yes, I remember.
Now, do you think that is actually in the show? Because I didn't go back to listen. Do you think it's actually in the show, or do you think it's some sort of rare, weird goof up on the recording you had?
Let's just play it first, so people know what we're talking about.
No, Jim.
That's supposed to be just Spock, and you clearly hear two voices.
No, Jim.
I watched this on Paramount Plus, so what else can I say?
Well, I'm just saying. Then you got the Deep Space Nine one. Play Bashir's weird business.
What was the Bashir's weirdness?
That you just played that has the weird echo or whatever, the weird sound you were saying.
It was,
literally the last Deep Space Nine clip you've played this episode.
Yeah. And
literally.
And
Mr. Scrolly.
I just can't remember what it was.
It was.
My goodness, man.
It was Bashir saying something and it was all echoey and you said that it had a weird sound.
Oh, I remember now.
Okay. Cheers.
There you go.
See, it has a wobble. It has a wobble.
I don't know.
Cheers.
A tremolo?
Tremolo.
I don't know. You might have something crazy going on with your computer.
No, man, because look, this is...
Correct.
That's fine.
Oh, by the way, I should tell the audience I've decided to sit down for the time being. I don't know. Maybe in the third break I'll stand up again.
It's a little bit more comforting.
Yeah, but the problem, but you're pulling a Sloan shit on me because you're switching it up. I had just gotten used to you standing up, and now your ass is sitting down.
You're pulling a Sloan shit.
And I got my legs crossed. Is this freaking you out a little bit?
No, I'm fine with that. It's just you're sitting down now, and like, you know, like Sloan would, one second he'd be, you know, trying to play nice with Bashir like he's on his side. Then the next minute he's like trying to trick him to sign it. And the next minute he's like, you think you're smarter than us, don't you?
I'll get you your scones and Mobo Jam.
Mobo Jam.
Red Leaf Tea.
Red Leaf Tea.
Hot buttered scones, Mobo Jam, Red Leaf Tea.
Mobo Jam.
Hot buttered scones, Mobo Jam, and some Red Leaf Tea.
Do you remember when I first offered you scones?
Those were really big scones.
Jeffrey Combs is quite sensual.
It's a little early for Gach.
Yeah, I know. It was quite a sensual way of saying it. You'd think there was something going on with them. But
maybe there was.
Kind of sketchy.
You know, that's a big leap they took, though, that, like, because, you know, some mornings I like eggs, some mornings I like waffles. So that's a big leap to say he orders buttered scones once and suddenly
you can't eat it all the
suddenly
time.
Sloan decides that's like his favorite meal ever. That means he's really on the ropes. Like Sloan, it really is grasping there because like it's a big assumption to make it seem like, oh, it's like, haven't you ever eaten one thing?
Why are you assuming it's an assumption? Why not? Why can't that just be their intelligence?
Just
they gathered on Bashir. They know that happens to be his favorite.
That's what he tried to
food.
Order.
No,
right
I don't think
away.
They're assuming it from what
I think
he
they're assuming. I think they're assuming it from breakfast. Yeah,
I don't see why.
It's like, haven't you ever like eaten something and then someone decided it was like your favoriteest thing in the world?
Sure, I'm familiar.
It's like what Google does what Google does when I like look up a subject. It suddenly thinks it's my favorite subject in the world. I didn't tell the audience about that one time I looked up whites, W-I-G-H-T, which is some kind of demons. And some white demons?
Yeah, it's a ghost.
One night,
a white is a ghost.
One night, I did two searches for whites. And I also have some Hue lights. And I always say like this, turn living room white, right? Just to make it white because I like the white color. And after that one night of searching twice
that
in Google
night,
for white.
Would you say that white is supreme?
After that one night of saying, of searching for W-I-G-H-T, then the next day when I said, Google or Hue or Google or whatever, turn the living room white. It would spell out white properly, but then it would re-spell it as W-I-G-H-T.
Oh, yeah, you said that.
And
yeah.
I couldn't get it to stop.
That's
and that was
spooky,
from
dude.
I've been saying that shit into that thing for over 5 fucking years. And one night I look up W-I-G-H-T and
the
Google's like,
of the whites.
Dan loves whites. He
the
loves the whites.
The
Dan loves the whites.
I've been to the Isle of Wight.
Can we cut that clip out?
You want to isolate
a good highlighting clip. Dan loves the whites.
I've been to the Isle of Wight.
No.
Yeah, Jesse.
Not this time.
Jesse's been to the Isle of Wight, and all three of us share in common
the
socially constructed race of white.
Oh, that's
Melvin.
I can't believe we just Melvin death.
They Melvin.
That's right, it was death.
All right, yeah, I suppose that's somewhat of a segue to talk about William Sadler. Who is brilliant in the role of Deputy Director Sloan, or whatever his rank is.
He's got a funny face.
It's usually what he goes to. He's only in 3 episodes of Deep Space Nine.
You might be a king or a little street sweeper, but sooner or later you dance with the Reaper.
The Reaper.
I like that you kept that tail on there.
Yeah. It's good because it's like ding, 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 ding.
You're getting close to the TMNT 1990 movie music. And don't bore Jesse.
Oh, you mean like
regular or menthol? William Sadler's great.
Excellent.
And he's only in
69, dude.
3 episodes of It's Got Star Trek.
Star Trek. Wait, what are you saying?
I don't think he's been in any.
It's because I'm sitting down. I'm all thrown off because I'm sitting down. No.
I've finished playing games with you, Sloan.
He's in 3 episodes of Deep Space Nine, but he has such an impact on the lore and the psyche of this show and of Star Trek more broadly, because we do know, for better or worse, depending on the implementation, post Deep Space Nine, Section 31 is not handled quite as consistently or well as it is here. But
so,
Sloan is
it's
great.
It's a discovery.
William Sadler is great. And I just, before we forget, Dan was playing tapes.
Yeah, tapes. I have carts. I have radio carts that he put in.
He jammed them in the hole.
Clips from one of William Sadler's most famous roles as Death, as the Grim Reaper in Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. Bogus.
Damn right!
Which is, I think, arguably the best of the three Bill and Ted
movies. I still like the first one better, but I think the second one offers its own quality thing.
The first one, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure is a great movie. Yeah. It's a funny movie. It's fun. It's charming. Wonderful all around.
The second one is like more adventurous.
Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey is interesting.
It's
upsetting and philosophical confusing journey. At points.
No, I agree.
That's mostly because of the station.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is this things about Station seem like they kind of like Station ended up as this crazy character that I appreciate, but at the same time, it feels a little half baked.
If you haven't seen Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, rush out now, go see it so that you understand what we're talking about when we're referencing the character. Do you guys not?
It does connect to Star Trek because they went to that place where they filmed Station? That battle.
No, no, they went to the rocks.
No, do you guys agree that Station
Vasquez Rocks? I think it is.
Do you guys feel that the
Jem Hadar?
I'm listening, baby.
The character of Station is a little bit half baked. I mean, it feels like they kind of like sort of summoned that out of their ass. I don't think a lot of thought went into Station.
I think Station is a lot of that movie kind of came out of
one of the most fascinating characters ever to be dreamed up by any writer, human or
and
otherwise.
And I'm saying I don't think it was a work of like great thought. Like, you know, I think
counterpoint. It was the most brilliant thing ever put to paper.
Counterpoint. Yeah. You know,
that's my justification.
Yeah.
The golden age of American cinema.
Anyway, exactly. William Sadler, people will also remember him fondly from Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah. Andy Dufresne.
He's Andy Dufresne's friend.
He's not really his friend.
Yeah, he's his friend.
Eh.
He's his friend. He helps. Anyway, I'm not going to get into a whole Shawshank Redemption thing.
Yikes.
He's one of his friends. And he's the bad guy, right, in Die Hard 2.
Is he?
Yeah,
he's in Die Hard 2. I only saw Die Hard 2 like once, like decades ago.
Well, yeah, it's because it's not a good movie. Nobody needs to see it.
This is irrelevant.
But okay, fair point. That's a keeper too. That goes in the regular bank. Did you color it whatever
Sheep
color
O'Brien.
It needs to be colored to be like easily accessible?
I just put it in the best of folder right now. Good.
This is irrelevant.
This is irrelevant.
Yeah. Evidence.
Evidence.
William Sadler.
I'm not joking, Lee.
William Sadler's really great, and it's fun to watch Alexander Siddig acting against William Sadler. I think they have really good chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great chemistry in all of the interactions in this episode, but particularly between William Sadler and Alexander Siddig, and also Jeffrey Combs as Wei-Yun. I think that's another. There's less screen time of that, but that's another really interesting interaction they have.
And you kind of referenced this earlier, Patrick, but watching the episode for the first time, it's like there's all this intrigue going on. Mm. But then at the end, when you find out, you know, it was all a dream or whatever, it was a hollow program. It lets you watch
hologram?
It. It lets you. It's one of those things that you know, a lot of shows will have something in there, and you're like, that means I can watch it again and get something more out of it. But it's only like a thing here or there. Like, you can rewatch the entire episode with kind of a new meaning, knowing that because there's fake O'Brien, there's fake Sisko.
Fake everybody.
And,
teddy bear falling down.
And, like, the idea of, like, Sisko starting on O'Brien's side, but slowly getting to the other side to help fuck with him. And then, like, O'Brien leaking the I'm not sure why O'Brien leaked the information to Julian. I don't know how that helps Sloane's case, but
I'll tell you how it helps. This is part of again, it's such a well-structured episode because all of those things work.
All right, people.
When you're watching the episode and don't realize the twist yet, right? And I've seen this episode a million times. I knew the twist going into it, but you still get wrapped up in the story. So like when he comes back to his room and his pad is in a different location, pen is still there.
Why did
the teddy bear is falling?
Okay,
over.
Why did he reach under the couch? I'm not sure why
he dropped
that.
His pen. It rolled under the couch.
I
he was trying to get it. And when they left, I'm making a point. Let me know if you agree with this point. The reason they did all that was because initially, before you know the twist, you're supposed to think, okay, clearly his room was searched, and it was searched in sort of a sloppy way. So you're thinking, these are some like sloppy, shady people, because the teddy bear's fallen over, the pad isn't where it was before, and his pen is still lost under the couch, so he's able to find that, right? Because they showed him lose the pen, he wasn't able to retrieve it before they asked him to go talk, and when he came back, shadiness was happening. Same thing with the O'Brien thing. You're like, when you're first watching it through, you're like, oh, that's O'Brien doing something clever, using clever technological ability in order to help his buddy out. But then retroactively, you're like, oh, that's Sloan making Julian stressed out by having O'Brien tell him, these motherfuckers are after you. Because at that point, Bashir did not think that they were after him. He was just sort of annoyed that he was missing his conference.
O'Brien was like, watch out, dude.
So he comes in the room, sees he's been searched, and then immediately O'Brien's like, they're fucking after you. And that's supposed to put him in it. Because remember, Sloan is like, I wanted you to be, we're testing you. We wanted to freak you the fuck out and see how you reacted. So that's what's brilliant on the second watch through. You're like, oh, all these things that looked like mistakes were actually very cleverly done on purpose.
Yeah, and I guess my whole thing is that, yes, I understand that he wants to freak him out he did that because he's trying to fuck with him, like the same reason he gave him the gawk and all that stuff. I just didn't...
Gawk.
And you explained why it's effective, but I still have a hard time seeing how it's more effective for Bashir to think they're after him going in, rather than Sloan dropping the subject onto him during, like, flip the switch in front of him during the meeting. That would probably fuck with him too, you know, just as much. But I don't know.
Maybe, maybe not. I can see the value of this slow ratcheting up, because that's what they did. They ratchet up throughout the whole episode. It gets click, 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 more and more oppressive and horrible.
You could,
and unfair.
You could say that because Bashir doesn't know that they know that O'Brien told them, like, they're trying to watch it to see if Bashir maybe changes his tactics, knowing that Bashir got info from O'Brien. So they're like, we're going to reveal that, we're going to fuck with him, and we'll see if Bashir changes his tactics because, like, he now knows we're... I don't know. I guess it's just... there were a lot of hard 180s in that shit that were like, you know, he'd go from saying, like, you're smarter than us, don't you? Do you think you're smarter than us, don't you? To, like, just confess, you know? And he started all off with just like, you know, I'm just trying to help you. I'm just like, he just used every fucking tactic and he would turn on a dime. And that's like enough to, like, and him being hungry the whole time. So yeah, it was a,
did man, contribute to him sucked.
Just, but just a very superficial point. I didn't actually see O'Brien drop the pen. I knew he was looking
for... You mean
for
sure.
I'm sorry, Bashir dropped the pen, and it looked like he was getting the pen by reaching up into, like he was curling his fingers up into the couch. He wasn't curling.
So for the audience at home, Dan is miming all of this, and it's making Jesse and I
that's
a little
yucky.
He was like going like this.
No, he was not.
He was like going like, he was twiddling his finger like this. Like, no, he's going up.
No. I find what you're doing now erotic but upsetting.
And he had like the lip of the couch, the downward facing lip of the couch in the arc, the crest.
There's like a recliner.
The crest between his thumb and his middle finger.
Man, we really got to switch to a YouTube podcast.
And then he like wiggles his finger around.
We would be demonetized.
See, he should flip his hand quickly. He should flip his hand over because presumably the pen would be on the ground. I'm just saying. I didn't understand the logistics of it.
I don't disagree with you about the awkwardness of his chosen method of retrieving the pen.
That's very considerate of you.
But they did show him, he grabs his pad and pen, and the pen, like in the process, his pen drops and then the doorbell chimes. He puts the pad down. Oh, and by the way, of course, we always have to mention the hilarious thing about Star Trek, in that they, on the one hand, correctly predicted and sort of imagined the idea, maybe not predicted, I'm sure other sci-fi has done this as well, but the idea, they popularized this idea of having essentially a tablet, what we would now call a tablet. Of course, what they didn't think is that one tablet would be sufficient to hold, show lots of information. Everyone's got to have a bunch of pads. Okay? Bashir is packing up for his conference. He's just like, here's all my fucking pads all stacked together, shoved into my bag, all like jauntily looking out like he's a
hobo. My teddy bear.
It was, if only there was a way we could utilize communication techniques to like send information back and forth. Mm-hmm. I mean, they got subspace. You'd think they could do.
It does make me, when I pack up for a trip, it does make me sad that I don't have like five Kindles. Mm. I've just got my one Kindle Paperwhite that I stick in the bag. Feel, I'm like, man, I want people to think I read a lot by having lots of Kindles.
Does it make you feel small and insecure and insignificant?
No, it's a pretension thing. It's that people don't realize how awesome, how like smart I am about reading books. Yeah.
Those other people on the trail.
Like when people are like, I read like 20 books at once. I'm like, why would you do that? Just
it's sufficient. That's really
just,
hard to do.
Just read the one book and finish it. And then you can get to the next book. And
so
then, and then
you just
and
go
then,
from book to book.
And then you get little emails that say how awesome it is that you read a book.
You finished
I generally
book.
Can't focus on more than one thing at a time, like one book at a time, one video game at a time, you know, that kind of thing.
What video game are you currently playing?
Actually, I'm trying to figure out the next game I want to play. I've been going back to Borderlands 3 while I figure out what I want to play next. I might play Warhammer 40K Space Marines 2.
Okay.
But I'm also thinking
that's a mouthful.
Yeah. But I'm also thinking about this game Days Gone that like I don't have high hopes for, but some people insist it's like an amazing game, but like it's also gotten really terrible reviews. I'm also considering this game called Kingdom Come Deliverance, which is like there's a sequel just came out.
Is that like about where like Jesus starts murdering everybody? It's like he comes back and just gets revenge.
It's like a deliverance, like squeal like a pig. Like Jesus is doing that to people.
Oh, no.
There's actually a controversy surrounding Kingdom Come Deliverance because the guy, one of the programmers, supposedly, some people accuse him of being like anti-feminist or something, but he just insists that the game's full of white people basically, so yeah. But like apparently the second game they do a better job of approaching that issue, so I don't know,
do they give the white people slaves or something?
I don't know I'm not sure what's going on tonight.
All right, well,
but
Jesse, are you playing any games, Parcheesi, backgammon? Do you play any of those medieval games like what's that, Nine Men's Morris or whatever they call that, where you like have the little checker pieces hopping over stuff?
Sounds interesting.
Yeah. Anyway,
I don't play that.
Anyway,
what about you, Patrick?
I've just been playing Zelda Tears of the Kingdom for the past 5 or 6 years.
You think you're smarter than the rest of us, don't you?
No, I find it very meditative just to sort of wander around and collect stuff.
I've played a ton of Zelda, and I'm going to come back to it to finish collecting stuff. I just need a break for a bit from it because I've been playing a lot of it.
Gotcha. I understand.
But anyways, as you're saying, we want a lot of Kindle, so you like want to look smart.
I want to look like I have a lot of pads. Yeah. Is really what it is. Right?
What if I decide to expose you?
There's things that motivate you.
You can have like
in
different
life.
Sizes and different like a different library on each one.
Yeah. You're lying. What if I decide to
You're
expose
lying,
Dan you?
But you, hey Dan, earlier you were talking about Sloane being this master gaslighter. And yeah, he really is.
He is.
It's fascinating to watch it in action. But you know what? The only one who might be better than him is Wei-Yun. Wei-Yun is also really good at the gaslighting. And I know.
Yeah,
this
but that
is
wasn't
a,
even
this,
Wei-Yun.
I know
in this
is a holographic Wei-Yun. I'm stipulating to that, of course.
Holograms,
but it is, I think, an accurate representation.
Pert butt.
Of Wei-Yun. Both of them are great. We get to see a lot of gaslighting in this episode. And I wanted to call out some of those things because I could see people looking at it two ways. Like, for example, there's a point where in one of the interrogations where Sloane says that the fact that Bashir wanted to cure the Jem'Hadar of their addiction to white showed that he had a sympathy to the Dominion,
right,
which doesn't make sense because actually the Dominion doesn't want them cured of their addiction to white because the Dominion, the founders programmed that into the Jem'Hadar genetically so they could control them. It's a tool of oppression. Mm-hmm. So Sloane's logic doesn't make sense. That's and I could see some people saying that that's bad writing or a bad argument. I think that they have so many bad arguments from Sloane's perspective that that's part of the deal. Sloane is making patently ridiculous arguments because he is serving in the role. Again, we have to remember the twist. He's testing Bashir. He's stressing Bashir out. He's trying to see if Bashir will crack under the pressure. And so he's railroading him. And part of being railroaded is that it's not, look, we've seen those stories where somebody gets accused of a crime and we know they're innocent, but that the evidence, the circumstantial evidence, does kind of point in their direction, right?
Evidence!
This is a different story. This is like really pushing the envelope of making bad arguments, circular arguments, as Sisko notes. He makes his argument that doesn't make any sense about the sympathy for
That's
the,
a circular the, argument, and you know it.
Yeah, but the sympathy for the thing that doesn't make sense. He also says at one point, remember when Sisko says to Sloane, your son died, which by the way, presuming that didn't happen, I forget.
Yeah, actually, that's what I meant to ask that. It's like, yeah, I was wondering if Sloane had any connection at all with this event, at all, like in personal connection at all.
Probably not. Probably all made up. But like, regardless, he makes the argument, like, because Sisko says, don't you have a conflict of interest
if
you're leading
more,
this investigation?
Makes him more dedicated.
And yeah, and it's like, that's a crazy argument.
Yeah.
Right?
It doesn't mean he wants to find the truth more. It means he wants to blame someone
it
more.
Is a conflict of interest.
Yeah,
it's true. Yes, maybe that doesn't prevent you from contributing to an investigation, but it does mean people maybe you're maybe going to go down some paths.
Yeah, because you're not
due
more
to desperation to find the truth.
Yeah, you're not more interested in truth, you're more interested in punishment.
Revenge, whatever that might be.
But don't you think that your son's death indicates a conflict of interest in your investigation?
That's a great delivery by Avery Brooks. That's a classic Sisko delivery.
Is so fucking great. I'm so delighted that I got to see him on stage because seeing him in person was so fucking powerful. He's
all right, people.
Really, I wish he were still doing some acting. But
you're right. You should have.
When did you see Avery Brooks? Brooks, my favorite Brooks.
I saw him in Tamberlin, the Shakespeare Theater in D.C. Wow. He did a run where he was playing Tamberlin, Christopher Marlowe, who is a contemporary of Shakespeare, Tamberlin the Great, which is an interesting story in and of itself, but it was a very good production. And the production, there was sword fights and there were chariot battles. It was all sorts of crazy stuff going on stage. It was really fun.
That sounds cool.
Yeah.
Wait, where was that?
I was at the Shakespeare Theater, yeah, in D.C. Oh, yeah,
the
Folger?
No, the Folger is a separate one. There's the Shakespeare Theater.
I don't know what I'm talking about.
There's a few different theaters.
Where?
Anyway, back
you
in the
room. You will say yes.
Yes.
What did they want?
What did they want?
What did they want?
All right, people.
But don't you think that your son's death indicates a conflict of interest in your investigation?
But that is another example of, again, you could say, why do they let him get away with it? That's the point. The point is that Bashir is being railroaded. We're meant to be super upset, sympathizing with his position, and thinking about what would it feel like if we had an authority figure abusing their power to accuse you or yourself or a loved one or a friend or somebody you respect of a crime. And then what would make that feel even worse? When your friends start turning against you. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
And they buy
we
into
might,
the gaslighting.
We might get to experience that.
Yeah. Well, and he tried, it was weird, his logic for, there was a part where he was kind of trying to appeal to his vanity, but in a strange way when he was talking about like engrammatic,
He's like, you're such a genius.
Wait, no, he goes, you're such a genius that you're able to compartmentalize different aspects of your personality so they don't communicate with each other. But that's such a dangerous, it's like you're so smart that can be exploited. Yeah. It's like you're so smart that you can do this dangerous thing that can easily be exploited. The only way analogy I can think of is if you're like involved in a dangerous sport. Like, let's say you're an amazing cliff diver, right?
Cliff dive.
And like and you can do shit that nobody can do, but it's risky. If you fuck up even just a little bit, you're dead. You're like getting, you know, got fucked up against the cliff. That's like Bashir's ability. That's how it makes sense in my mind. It's like he's so smart that he can do this, but it's a dangerous thing to do and it leaves him open for attack. But it was a really fucking weird, yeah, it was, I don't know if
it's
I
like
fully,
off the cliff into some water.
I don't know if I fully bought the argument, but it was a weird one for sure.
Well,
it's like you're so smart that you can be taken advantage of, basically.
I think you've made a very important point here, Dan, in that they went out of their way. Sloane specifically went out of his way to associate the genetic engineering that went into making him very smart and physically have all these special attributes and stuff, as opposed to just relying on something that we already know they can do. Because again, as I mentioned before, there was the episode where Geordi is turned into an assassin, but he doesn't have any genetically engineered components. He was just, they used a special, it was also some sort of engram business, you know, hidden memories or whatever, planting.
Assassin!
Yes.
Murderers! Murderers!
Indeed.
Assassins!
Yes. Indeed. So
that's how it goes, man.
There's the Geordi one, but frankly, there's countless of other examples in Star Trek of people being brainwashed in some fairly straightforward,
like Spock's brain.
Are those worms in the brain?
There's the worms in the brain. What about Spock's brain?
They're psychic.
No,
psychic
when they control Spock with
that's
the
not the same, Dan. They took his brain out and they used it for. used it.
You're absolutely sure about that?
I am.
I doubt it.
But I think we can infer that because they didn't go the easier and frankly slightly more plausible route of an existing sci-fi reason why Bashir could have been brainwashed, they were obviously, as you said, Dan, he was testing his vanity. Mm-hmm. Sloane was testing Bashir's vanity. If you go through the episode, he's testing various aspects. How does Bashir respond to somebody treating him well? How does Bashir respond to being tired and hungry? How does Bashir respond to being threatened and accused of a crime that's clearly and obviously unfair? How does Bashir respond to being given a reason that he might actually have committed this crime, and that reason being he's so fucking cute and charming and clever, right? That's his appealing to his vanity.
You think you're smarter than the rest of us, don't you?
You think you're smarter than the rest
of us. When I'm done, I'm going to take whatever's left of you and I'm going to lock it away.
Lock it away.
Mostly pretty cool the whole time. Like was like, he went in there and he was like, well, where's Odo?
I thought what was interesting was when he gets beamed aboard the Jem'Hadar Cardassian ship. I guess it looked like a Cardassian ship. The controls were clearly Cardassian.
There were Cardassians on that ship, man.
Yeah, so they, you know, at this stage in the war, the Cardassians are fully allied with the Dominion, and so we have a Cardassian guard, we have a Jem'Hadar guard.
No.
And we have Weyoun, and so Bashir is beamed over there, and at that point, you're like, okay, this is plausible, and maybe I am a secret spy. I like that at that point, Bashir, he thinks about it. He's like, okay, all right, they beam me over. Weyoun is sitting here telling me I'm a spy. Mm-hmm. It jibes with everything Sloane suggested before. And he thinks about it. He's like, no, but he thought about it, right? It wasn't immediate, like, no, this is bullshit. He thought about it, and that's because Bashir is a thoughtful person, and he was willing to say, you know what, I am willing to consider this as an option, but when I think about it, no, it doesn't make any sense.
Totally.
You know what makes sense?
Going to a break?
Hey, Dan, how'd you know that?
A break. Because he's a smart guy.
Dan's looking at the clock. All right, we've got to take another
break.
You
have a problem with
that? But don't worry, we're not going to be gone long. From your perspective, it's going to be like super quick. So we'll take the break, and then we'll be right back. Okay, that's how it's going to work. All right? So I'll say the magic words. Be right back.
This will only take a moment.
Take your time.
All right, we are back.
No wonder I feel so tired.
Something tells me I'm going to need a lot of Ractaginos today.
I really want to have a
Ractagino.
Yeah.
It's a nice sounding name.
Klingon coffee. I know there's some brands out there that have marketed it or something similar.
When I think of Ractagino, I think of some kind of coffee made from bat parts. And the reason is that.
Not rat parts?
No, rack, because it's rack.
I know, but. It's not.
Well, it's because in the Borderlands game, there are these flying like rat monsters called racks.
Okay. So they are like a rat, but they're like a bat.
They're like a bat rat.
In German,
but bats
are
like rats.
A bat is a Fledermaus, yeah. Which maybe is a flying mouse.
Yeah, I know this. So maybe let me look up a rack in Borderlands and tell you what it looks like. In the meantime,
I've got some German magic cards for like bats, and they're all like Fledermaus.
They're Fledermaus.
Oh, great. My shit's just frozen up.
Well,
Chrome just froze up on me. Thanks, Chrome.
Well, that's why you should switch to Firefox. While you're sorting out your business, I'll comment on the fact that Google keeps auto-correcting when I typed in Jem'Hadar into my phone notes. It keeps correcting it to Jed'Hadar.
So have you looked up Jed'Hadar yet?
No, but it's funny because it doesn't correct the Hadar, so maybe I guess that's a word or something, but I'm just like, I want to meet this Jed'Hadar.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You got to like actually look it up.
My name is Jed'Hadar.
So I'm trying to like...
Because he could barely keep his family fed Hadar.
And then he found, was shooting at some food, and up from the ground came some bubbling Ketracel White.
You know, it's kind of hard to say what racks look like. They have like a sort of bat / dragon wings, and their face has all these like these things coming out of it, like these big talons coming out of their face.
Why don't you do a video game podcast?
Because there's
like really good at evoking, at verbalizing, at making, turning into audio format.
You could be one of those influencers.
No, because there's 1.5 million video game podcasts already. Nobody cares.
But yours could be the best one ever.
Yours is gold, baby. It's gold. Like,
that's all I have to do is make
Danny
it the best
gold.
Forced confessions, of course. That scene is interesting. That's right before Bashir gets beamed away in this little play that Sloane has put together. And it's really one of the most uncomfortable scenes for me. I know it's brief, but where Sloane comes in, he's back to being all charming and nice and acting sympathetic. And he's like, hey, man, I get it. You know, it's crazy, you know, crazy technology, engrams and all this stuff. Here, just everything's going to be fine. You're not going to go to this crazy Federation gulag. All you have to do is sign this paper that says you did it.
All you have to do is, you sound like the Beastie Boys. All you have to do is sign that paper.
Doesn't that sound
like the Beastie Boys? All you got to do is sign that paper. Beastie Boys, let the mic drop.
I was upset by that because, well, I mean, we're meant to be upset by that because a forced confession for a crime you didn't commit is horrifying, right? It's one of the most horrible things you can imagine.
It seems like at a certain point, like Sloane, it's almost like Sloane didn't even think he did it anymore. He was just trying to see if he could get it out of him or something.
Well, exactly. And by the way, this happens all the time in real life because people who don't have the resources and the legal team access and stuff are often given the option saying like, hey, look, man, you say you didn't do it, but... We convinced we can put you away. Sign this paper and just say you did it, and you get like a year of probation or 2 years in jail instead of 30 years.
Now, there's nothing in the script that explicitly says this, but at some point he could have switched over to being like, I'm testing you now to see if you're worthy of Section 31, and I'm still going to accuse you to see if you can hold up. So it could have been he was just at some point decided, I don't care if he's guilty. I just want to see if he's good enough to be in Section 31. But that's a lot of,
well, that's
an
doing.
Assumption.
Yeah, that's what he was doing the whole time. There was no point where Sloan thought that...
You don't think so?
I don't think there was ever a moment...
No, it was all about...
It was all just a test to be in Section 31.
It was a recruitment. Yeah. They were targeting him because they wanted him to be a spy. And this was the scenario they came up with to test whether he was going to be able to handle the types of scenarios he would face if he were a Section 31 officer.
Because I think like he thought that he was going to be in... He did it, and then when he found out he didn't do it...
No,
it because was... At one point he's like, I'm not finished with you yet. He's like, He goes, Bashir's like, I didn't do it. And he's like, I'm beginning to think that. And so that would like...
That was part of the play, part of the performance that was being put on. The story, to my mind, the story does not make any sense unless this is a pure recruitment effort and the entire story from the beginning and the torture techniques of taking Bashir when he only had an hour of sleep, refusing to give him food. Those are all things that only make sense in the context of we are trying to recruit this guy, but this is a test. This is the test before the last stage before we actually take him. We know everything about him. We've studied him. We know he's genetically engineered. We have all these files on him. Now we want him. Now let's put him through the final test. Can he handle the types of shit he would deal with if he were a Section 31 agent? I think that's the entire point of the entire ruse.
It's before waterboarding.
I don't know. I don't think there's anything specific that explicitly says that in the episode.
All right, well, write us in, audience. Write us in at feedback@itscottstartrek.com and let us know. What are your thoughts? Do you think this was entirely a recruitment thing? Do you think they thought he was a spy and only decided to recruit him afterwards?
Like,
let us know.
Why did they introduce Section 31 at all then? Like, were they planning on following
up?
Because
they're snakes.
What, you mean, why did the writers?
Yeah, but so they could, I mean, at the end, Sisko was like, next time you see him, you know, go.
First of all, I'm
sure
they were going to do more, but no, you don't even need to do more. They're introducing the idea. It's a very interesting idea.
Yeah,
it shifts entirely our understanding and perspective, which, by the way, has led to a tremendous amount of debate about the value of Section 31, even in the Deep Space Nine context, because it introduces the idea that in order to have utopia, you need to have shady motherfuckers who go against the rules of that utopia to maintain the utopia.
I mean, I've heard
which
people,
is more realistic.
I feel like I've heard people argue that Section 31 was only meant to be like a throwaway plot device, and it wasn't actually.
You may have, but those people don't have much of a leg to stand on because. They did go back to it.
Well, they found it was intriguing enough that they found it.
Second of all, they do at the very end have this very clear open-ended line of like, hey, we want you to say yes to this guy next time he comes back. So, but they didn't have to go back because in terms of just the writing perspective, telling a story, they have permanently altered what we understand of how Starfleet and the Federation work, because they've introduced this Obsidian Order, Tal Shiar style, shadowy organization, which pissed off a lot of people.
Yeah, I was going
to
say,
that's
sort of like against what Star Trek began as. Supposedly.
It goes against the Roddenberry style of Star Trek. The counterpoint, and I'm not saying which side I fall on because I'm really kind of, I wouldn't say I'm neutral on it. I'm conflicted about it because I find that Section 31, like so many things that Deep Space Nine introduced, adds an important dose of reality to Star Trek and an important critique of even the concept of a utopia. What does it mean to be a utopia when you have people who live inside the utopia and people who live outside the utopia?
Yet,
and people outside the utopia have their own desires that sometimes conflict with the utopia.
But then it's not a utopia because, like, at least Roddenberry's view of utopia, because he was pretty clear, like, in the future, we will think differently. We won't feel the need to have things like this in order to have a utopia. And I see that this is a pragmatic approach, being like, something's got to give if you want a utopia. Something has to give.
This is the pragmatic response to that.
Right, but Roddenberry was just like, no, it's gonna be better. We don't have to deal with a bad side in order to have a good side.
But this is like Ursula Le Guin in those Who Leave O'Malus.
Did she do those Labyrinth books? Those books where there's a, they were in a labyrinth or something.
Well, she did all sorts of yeah, the Earthsea stuff. But there's also the Strange New Worlds episode that's similar, where there's the city that everything works amazingly as long as they torture a young boy, right? Yeah. You know, so Star Trek has gone back to this idea,
like
a few
the Tombs
times.
Of Atuan or something.
But that idea, it's interesting that they inserted this idea, and you kind of have to live with it. When you have now, if you're a Star Trek fan, you've got to explain away or deal with this idea of Section 31 one way or the other.
Remember Fruitopia?
I do. I remember fruit.
Some kind of fruit punch.
I remember the fruit.
Was it gum? Because I don't think I ever had Fruitopia.
It was
fruit,
like
fruit rolls. Fruit roll
juice.
That was juice.
What was the gum that was really fruity, super fruity, but it went away all quick?
Fruit stripe gum.
Yeah, that was like really delicious for like two bites.
Didn't it turn out that it made all your skin slough off? Like your face would just fall off if you ate too much of it?
Yeah, especially your genitals.
Or like how Big League Chew,
Armadillo
like people
gum.
Would put the whole bag in their mouth and, you know, choke.
Remember as a kid, they'd have like bubblegum cigarettes and you could suck them in and blow out powder. Yeah. You could blow out powder so to pretend you were smoking. Kids would walk around recess with these bubblegum cigarettes.
Or that thing about you couldn't eat Pop Rocks and drink like soda.
Yeah, that's how Mikey from the Czechs from Life Cereal died.
His head exploded.
From eating Pop Rocks and soda. Green Day had a song called Pop Rocks and Soda.
With all due respect, Captain.
With all due respect.
So we don't necessarily need to go into the debate here because it is a complicated debate. And I think lots of folks have written articles about this, et cetera, about the introduction of Section 31 into the Star Trek lore and what the implications are for how the Federation runs is one thing, right? There's the whole argument, does the Federation actually need something like that? And then there's the moral dimension of it, right? Which Sloan addresses in this episode, where he talks about how in order to have the moral high ground, basically, if that ends justify the means, you know, sometimes you have to have people who are willing to break the rules in order to allow everyone else to live by those rules, to keep those rules in effect.
Because the ends do justify the means.
The ends don't always justify the means.
And where it becomes interesting is precisely in this context of the timing in season 6 of Deep Space Nine, where there is an actual existential threat to the Federation in terms of the Dominion Alliance with the Cardassians, etc. There's a real chance that they can defeat the Federation, they could defeat the Klingons, and completely ruin everyone's cultures, etc. And so,
for real.
Yeah, and then so you get into the idea, okay, what is justifiable in those circumstances if you face a threat so significant that your entire culture could go away? And there's plenty of philosophical discussion, both within Star Trek and outside of it, about where those thresholds lie in terms of what's breaking rules, what's bending the rules. Is it better to stay true to your ideals, even if it means you go extinct? I don't know.
Get down in your bed, I love show business.
I like that. Can you hear him after he does the scythe swing over his head? You can hear him go doot 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 doot. Do you hear him say that?
Yeah.
Chief O'Brien.
Talk about echo.
Yeah. Talk about echo.
Talk about echo.
Get down with your bitch.
Get down with your.
It's right here. It's right here. It's subtle, but he goes doot 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 doot.
Now, I don't want to interrupt you from your tomfoolery because I am enjoying it. But just to continue the point, this episode, Sloan is stating outright, he's arguing the ends justify the means. Right? We are led to believe that that the writers in the voice of Bashir and Sisko and others don't necessarily agree. Odo might agree, right? I like how Odo straight up is like, Odo plays the real politic guy. He's the fan saying like, of course it makes sense to have Section 31. It's ludicrous to think that an organization, a large power, a great power, as he said, could run without some sort of shady business in the background. But this episode comes right before In the Pale Moonlight.
Yeah.
And in the pale moonlight, Sisko again has to wrestle with the idea, do the ends justify the means? Right? So it's immediately after this episode, Sisko, who we think is definitely on the side of Section 31 sounds shady and we shouldn't have them, to doing very Section 31 style stuff in order to help save the Federation.
Save the Federation.
Save the Federation.
Oh, sorry, Dan looked like he was going to click something. You moved very far away from your microphone.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
You're squinting at the
sometimes
screen.
I think I know where I leave a sound, and it's just totally gone out of my view.
Which is the sound going to...
Not
it gonna,
pleasant.
That wasn't the one I was playing.
All right.
It was... it's not often we here.
In time, he'll come to agree with me.
See, that would have made sense like 2 minutes ago, but okay. It doesn't. I couldn't find it.
Probably not worth us trying to recreate the context.
No, it's not.
But now you have it, so that if you need to play that again, should Jesse and I talk about something that would warrant you playing that sound to just sort of, you know,
not this time.
I like. There's two.
That sounds like Jake, because doesn't Jake say "not this time" at some point? I think he does.
Oh, he does say something like that.
Yeah.
Does Jake? What is? I don't know. Now I have to find all the Jake fucking comments.
Macaboo bread.
What is he talking about? Like
no crust.
He's talking about like you miss her companionship or whatever.
Rock the Gino, extra sweet.
Yeah, Rock the Gino, extra sweet. There were two parts. There were two parts where. Oh my god!
What is this?
I don't know what that was.
What are you doing here, Dan?
I don't know, man. There's a lot of chaos going on here right now.
Is it because I sat back down? Should I stand back up?
I'm sorry for wasting all your time. I'm just trying to get something.
You're not just wasting our time. You're wasting the time of many, many people out there.
Yeah, I know.
Internationally.
Hot buttered scones, mocha jam, red leaf tea.
Hot buttered
scones, mocha jam, and some red leaf tea.
Rock the Gino, extra sweet. Macabre bread, no crust. Macabre bread, no crust. It's a little early for gach.
Hot buttered scones, mocha jam, and some red leaf tea.
Hot buttered scones, mocha jam, red leaf tea.
Rock the Gino, extra sweet. Macabre bread, no crust.
Something tells me I'm gonna need a lot of fractuccinos today.
Was it worth it? No. Okay.
I don't know. I kind of enjoyed that.
You like the
totally do
the lack of the vamperage, up to leading up to it. There were two great smiles during the first interview that William Sadler gave. One of them was when he laughed when Bashir was like, "You have a good bedside manner." Mm-hmm. He was like, "Ha!" Yeah. He gave this great smile, and then the better one, my favorite one, was right in that same exchange. He goes like, "You know, I thought that I was gonna be put under a bright light," and he goes,
"Not this time."
It sounds so innocuous and safe, but like he really means it.
He's right.
That's vicious. It's
just the first round, buddy. Yeah.
The next time Bashir comes back, instead of sitting on the one side of the table all casual where they're close together, he makes Bashir sit down at the end of the table, and they really accentuate in the cinematography how bright that table is, because that's like a glowing white table.
I'm
pretty sure, I tried to rewind to compare, but I was too lazy to do it properly. Maybe somebody else out there can do that. To me, it looked like the table brightness had gone up. I don't know if they like physically made the table brighter, or if it was just sort of the angle, how they were shooting it, but it really did look like Bashir was... It was more of an interrogation framing than the previous framing that was more casual and chill.
There were the fake Cisco turning moments. There were four states of fake Cisco. There was number one, who's on his side at the beginning. Then the second one begins when he expresses disagreement over Bashir's decision to reveal war plans to genetically engineered dudes. That's when Cisco's like, "You know, I'm on your side, but I don't agree with that move, but that doesn't mean you're bad." And then like when Cisco straight up gaslights him, it's like, "Well, maybe you did do it, but you didn't realize it, so you're still a good person." And then the fourth one, he's like, "Fuck you, man, no more excuses." So I like that they sort of like did it in stages, you know. I thought that was a pretty good, I was enjoying how they sort of introduced that.
Yeah. It was the ratchet. Everything was ratcheting up.
Yeah, it was ratcheting up. Ratcheting and cranking. I actually have, and this is...
Ratchet and Clank?
That's a video game.
It is a video game.
Yeah. I recorded like 20 points where Sloan, starting with Sloan's interview technique to the end, but
is this one of your lists?
Yeah, but it's like 20 things long. I don't know if we really need to go through it.
I mean, you know, you want to give it a try and see?
I guess we can see. So at first he's nice to Bashir. He's trying to get info on him by being nice, like, you know, they're buddies and they got nothing to worry about, like, and so that Bashir can trust Sloan, so he can be honest with him. And that's how he gets him in things like when he says, you know, "Oh, you related to him." He's like, "Yeah, because you speak their language," in reference to the genetically engineered dude. He's like, "Yeah, I speak their language." And that's when Sloan is like, "Hmm." And then he goes,
is this continuing the very first point that he's being nice? Or are we on to the second point?
Well, this point was like... This point had 2 points, sub points. So then, okay. Well, so don't worry.
May
don't,
have been an error.
Don't
but
worry. Right. Then Sloane goes on to say, you know, you do whatever you can to cope. He said, like, I don't think I could handle something like that. And Bashir goes, you'd figure out it. You'd do whatever you can to cope with such a situation. And he's like, huh.
And so, humans are more adaptable in confinement than Klingons.
Right. That's an interesting bit of lore. Because usually when they talk about humans, it's all about, oh, they're curious or they just whatever. It's like something kind of bullshit. But I like the idea that Klingons are strong warriors, but they kind of break down if they're in a
freak out if you put them in a little cage.
But when Bashir says you do whatever you can to cope, that sort of speaks to him like being like, you know, I'd even betray the whole fucking Starfleet in order to cope, you know. And then there's an interesting difference between, because Bashir is like, I just wanted to save lives and end the war, but then he's like, but you wanted to do it by aiding the Jem'Hadar, right? Yeah. You know, there's parallels to real life about that sort of situation of like, what does ending a war mean? You know, when it's like, when the way you're ending the war is by like, you know, quote unquote aiding.
And we're still at a sub point of point number one.
Well, that was just like, no, that's of course going to be the longest because it sort of introduces all the stuff that's going on.
All right.
Then
point number two.
Sloane offers breakfast, but gets it wrong. We already talked about that. So it was weakening his constitution. Mm-hmm. Three, Sloane puts down.
Weakening the constitution? Where have I heard about that before?
In like D&D games?
No, I was making a sort of a wry reference to reality.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
Okay.
All right. Let's get back to
I was thinking about D&D. They have the constitution.
Yeah, I get it. Let's get back to non-reality here. You're fine. We're fine. Everything's fine.
I'll try to catch on to your cynicism better.
All right.
Sloane puts doubt in Bashir's mind with O'Brien's message. Number four, Bashir comes back to Sloane. This time, Bashir is more guarded and concerned and careful with his words. And Sloane is being more accusatory, starting to be a jerk about it. And then Sloane accuses Bashir. This is when Sloane starts using other tactics. He accuses Bashir about lying about the facts, like when and for how long he was in it. And then he says, then he switches to, oh yeah, well, you were able to escape because they let you escape, you know? And then, and he says like, oh, you joined them. And Bashir is like, I got captured. He's like, no, you joined them. So he keeps like throwing these different sort of like tactics of accusation. He appeals to, I mentioned this already, him appealing to Bashir's vanity, saying that his mind is so powerful that he can compartmentalize and separate his brain waves. And somehow he's so smart that makes it exploitable. And so he's somehow sensitive to mind control. He tries to get Bashir to confess.
Which point is this?
This is seven.
Seven. Okay. I'm trying to keep track.
Yeah. I'm flying through him. Oh, eight, Sloane then tries to get Bashir to confess by pretending to be on his side again. This time he's like, I just want to help you, you know. You should confess. Like, I just want to do what's best for you. The kind of like, if you confess now, it's going to be much better than if you confess later. I just want to help you. Then nine, but then he takes a total 180 turn and Sloane jumps to pretending to be offended by Bashir's arrogance. That's when he's like, you know, you think you're better than us, don't you? So first he's like, I want to help you. And then he's like, you think you're better than us. So that like is like jarring to try to take that that hard turn. Then he humiliates Bashir by parading him through the promenade in cuffs.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, that was fucked up. Yeah. And the third interview scene starts with, I like the shot of them in the third interview at the beginning. You can immediately tell that they've been in that room for like hours.
Forever.
Just like the first frame.
Avery Brooks looks so put out.
Yeah, I know. And that's great because you don't need any explanation. You immediately know they're exhausted. So, and Bashir is also fucking hungry. And this is 12. This is when Sisko has to admit that Bashir's decision didn't make sense, even though Sisko's like, no, he's not a terrorist. He's not a bad guy. But
he's just a dumbass.
He just made
a
dumb decision.
You know.
Then Sloane fucks with Bashir by making Sisko think that he's like, well, Bashir's a good guy, but he could have done it unwittingly. So he keeps switching back and forth.
Is that 13?
That's 15.
15,
14, 14,
14 okay.
Going to 15. So he keeps switching back and forth between this idea of like, I'm on your side. I want to help you to, you think you're smarter than us, don't you? And I think you're a good guy. So he keeps like going back and forth. When you're tired and hungry, it's got to be exhausting. 15, he tries to bargain with Bashir by saying he'll put him away forever unless he signs a confession. This is when he's starting to really reach by being like, just admit or else I'll sign you away forever. Bashir turns it down. So he goes out on a super limb and tries to get Bashir to...
Super limb.
He tries to get Bashir to... A super weak limb. Super limb. He tries to get Bashir... Super limb. Super limb. Super limb. Super limb. Super limb.
Don't fall in love with your own shit, Dan.
super limb. And tries to get Bashir to think he's with the Dominion by transporting him over. So that's like a shot... Like, that's one of the last moves you can pull. Because he's like, okay, maybe he'll give something away then. Then he does the thing where I say he's guessing the breakfast. Patrick is saying that they probably studied into finding out what his favorite breakfast is, which is true because like they were able to find out the Section 31 can find out all read into everyone's perverted Holosuite activities. Oh, you know? Yeah. That's the future we live in.
They're like, you know, you ever get those spam emails that are like, you don't know me, but I know you really well. And I used your webcam to watch you jerk off and I recorded it and I'm going to send it to all your friends. You know those emails?
Yeah, I know. I get them all the time.
Well, Section 31.
They're sending those emails?
No, they're doing it for real though.
They're for real?
Yeah, but they don't send you the email. They just record you slapping the bean.
Are you saying for real?
For real.
For real.
For real.
Now I'm at
Chief O'Brien.
What are you at? 18?
Bilan is on it.
I'm on 17 is breakfast. 18, Bashir catches on to everything that's going on, but he gets the specifics wrong. Bashir thinks that Sloan and Wei-Yun are in cahoots, which in a
he
way...
He says, why would you both be trying to convince me of the same lie?
Right, and so he's kind of right, but he doesn't have the full picture.
Not yet.
But that's when Sloan is like, uh-oh, he pretty much he's going to catch on. So Sloan somehow doesn't give up yet. He digs even deeper, and he fucking gets, like, fake Sisko to pull, like, a total, like, heel turn on Bashir, basically saying, like, no more of your excuses, you know? And then, like... That's like a last-ditch move. And then what ended it all was the scene from the very beginning when he noticed O'Brien's arm.
Chief O'Brien?
And that's when, it's always fun, you know, when there's something at the beginning that like seems like, it's like the Chekhov's gun thing, yeah. I guess, where it's like, it seems like nothing, but I still forget to take it in as that probably is going to come into later. There's a lot of, like in this episode, I forgot to be like, oh, that's probably going to come
into
play later.
It's when it's well written, you can start... predicting. If you know you're dealing with really good writers, that's when you can pay attention to those elements. Sometimes in less well-structured shows, there will be stuff that is meaningless or just doesn't come to
later. I agree with that mostly, but there's a fine line because someone might argue that it's better writing if you don't see it coming, but you might also argue that it's worse writing if there's nothing connecting it. If the reason you didn't see it coming is because there's no connective tissue.
I think both things can be true so long as it's done with purpose and care. The same thing could be said about music, right? Mm-hmm. Music works when it follows certain patterns. However, you can also go against those patterns, but even in going against those patterns, you are doing so in a patterned way, right? In order for it to make sense. If it's just cacophony or cacophony.
Cacobaloney.
Is it music anymore? I don't know. Maybe the first time somebody does it.
Cacophony.
The thing that Sisko says, too, is another example of what I was talking about with Sloan of... people making arguments that don't make sense, right? Like Sisko says, you're not going to get us thinking you're innocent by shifting the blame to somebody else. It's like, what are you talking about? Like, absolutely, that's one way to determine you're innocent is by proving somebody else did it. 100%.
I've finished playing games with you, Sloan.
So another example of that. And by the way, talking about O'Brien, I've always found it funny. They've got this running gag going back to TNG of O'Brien being into kayaking.
Oh.
And what's funny about it is that it just seems very...
Chief O'Brien?
Seems so out of character for O'Brien. Like, nothing against it. I love kayaking. Kayaking is awesome. I think it's great that O'Brien kayaks. And anybody should be perfectly happy to kayak. And there's no stereotype. There oughtn't be a stereotype about kayakers. But I don't know. I just don't buy that O'Brien was like... going kayaking for some reason.
More or less than Archer being into water polo.
No, Archer I buy to be in polo.
Because he's kind of a space nerd.
Yeah, he's a total space nerd. Yeah. Right? And remember, we talked about on Enterprise, we were like, at first we were like, oh, is it just like everyone's, like water polo is like this thing that everyone's into in the future? And then Enterprise makes it very clear. No, all think he's a weirdo. Like Trip is like, why the fuck is this guy into water polo?
According to your report, you and Chief O'Brien crash landed on the planet where you then made contact with a group of Jem Hadar.
Chief O'Brien?
According to Chief O'Brien, you were more interested in curing the Jem Hadar of their addiction to Ketracel White.
Chief O'Brien?
Yes, well, frankly, I would have preferred to have kept you under observation a little longer. Unfortunately, we didn't know about Chief O'Brien's injury, or we would have incorporated that into the program.
Chief O'Brien?
Have you isolated just Sloan saying Chief O'Brien?
Oh, no. That's a good idea, though. I usually am pretty good about that. I forgot.
You should go through this weekend.
Yes.
This weekend. Here's your task. Go through every
homework.
Every episode of Star Trek and just isolate anytime somebody said Chief O'Brien.
This will only take a moment.
What won't take a moment is us ending the show.
What?
It is
never.
That time.
We gotta end the
show. We've come up on our time. Any final points? I have one very minor final point. I really do like that in Sisko's little side office thing, he has a model of the International Space Station, because it's like on all the starships, they have models of other starships, and he's on a space station, so he has models of other space stations. I think that's cute.
That's a little nerdy, too.
It's a lot nerdy in an awesome way.
There are two duties in this episode. So here's one, duty one.
As of now, you're all relieved of duty and confined to quarters. Relieved of duty and relieved of duty and relieved of duty.
I hear the T, so it's a no duty.
Yeah.
This is by the way, again, new listeners, this is a classic gag. Dan, if he hears somebody say the word duty, he wonders whether they're saying duty or duty.
It's called duty or no duty.
Duty or no duty. And in this case, it took Jesse and I a long time to figure out the proper way to respond to Dan. He gets very upset if we respond incorrectly. We think he's saying duty, so we declare it's a no duty.
No,
at least I am. Jesse, do you concur?
Yeah, that's
relieved of duty.
That's what I hear as well.
And usually Jesse and I disagree with Dan because Jesse and I are against Dan.
We're
out to get him.
Isaac was right. Was mentioning, you know? See, I knew it. It's got someone else on my side here letting me know. See, we know it's truth when we get an outside perspective.
So that was the first one. What was the second one?
I got to say my opinion. I think it's almost a no duty, but it's still duty to me.
You still think it's a duty?
It's all duty to me.
I mean, you do always say it's a duty.
No, I have said duty before. I have.
I think you got that genetic thing where you can't hear T's.
What's that thing like, Slazier, or you know that sound thing where they say it twice and it's supposed to sound different depending
You're
on.
You're talking about Frisian?
Somebody says a word or a sound, and some people hear it as one word, and other people hear it as another word. It's like that audio version of when you look at a picture and it's like, do you see a bunny rabbit or a duck? You know,
or a blue rabbit, blue dress, or a gold dress. Anyway, what's the other no duty?
Stranger.
Duty or no duty?
Why? What made you confess? It was because you realized that it was your duty to be honest with your captain. It was your duty to be...
That's a duty.
It was your duty to be...
I think duty. It's a duty. You think it's a duty, Jesse?
Duty.
That's duty all the way.
That's a rare duty. Duty. It's been a while. It's been a while since we had a legitimate three-way duty.
That guy had fun with that, too.
Now, I will say the Cisco one, even though I said it's duty, it's barely duty.
Barely duty.
Barely duty.
Just barely.
With all due respect.
Glad to hear
that. That's a grim profession.
All right. So
that sounds like a cover-up to me.
That was Inquisition.
Our official designation.
That was Inquisition.
Section 31.
Inquisition.
We hope you all like that. The origin of Section 31... by the way, for those who aren't aware, a few weeks back we covered the movie Section 31.
Yikes.
Very, very different story. And that, by the way, you definitely go listen to it. I know there's mixed opinions, well, not that mixed, about the actual product of Section 31.
I mean, Patrick,
the podcast was great though. Dan has a nervous breakdown, but in a very positive way because he was very upset.
I remember one episode, I don't know if it was last episode or the one before. Patrick, you said you did not hate Section 31.
I don't hate Section 31.
Now, okay, first of all, there's not many things that...
I don't think I hate any Star Trek.
The thing is there's not many things that I hate. There's a few things that I hate, but overall, it's not saying much to say that you don't hate something. But so when you say it, it sounds like it's less that you don't hate it and more that you found some like real positives to it. And I did not find many positives at all.
I don't find many positives. Beyond, I don't think it is good. But I thought it was sort of interesting. I was more engaged by it than, say, watching like Nemesis or certain episodes of there's episodes of Star Trek that are either boring or they're offensive.
This was
just sort of like a school, like how do you not make a Star Trek movie?
So,
and that's kind of held my interest in some way.
And I can see how that crazy bullshit is entertaining. Yeah. I mean that.
You said it was like a spectacle kind of thing.
Yeah, it was. Well, I said it's like there's something incredible that this movie got
incredible.
Made,
that's
but
yeah.
It's not a good thing. Not in a good way.
Yeah,
now, and I understand why someone might look at all that and think like, and not be bored by it, and I totally respect it. To me, sometimes when there's too much shit going on, it becomes boring because I just can't
do it.
I agree,
but I don't know. I just, you know, folks, go listen to our podcast about Section 31.
Do it.
I don't seem to be going anywhere.
It was a fun one to record, a little bit intense, but next week.
It's like the fire at the circus. It's intense.
Next week, we'll be discussing.
What if it doesn't use tense?
Star Trek TNG's The Drumhead.
Bum, bum, bum.
Melvin.
Okay. Great, man. That's just wonderful.
Not again.
Watch The Drumhead. Go watch Beavis and Buttheads. No, not Beavis and Buttheads. Go watch Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
Yikes.
Yep, whoops.
Yikes.
Yikes. And if you'd like to check
out... I can't believe we just Melvin death!
You can
Melvin.
You can converse with us, feedback at itscottstartrek.com. Send us in a voicemail like Jesse and or Isaac did.
Send us in a voicemail.
You can send us an MP3 or go to www.itscottstartrek.com/record.
Send us in a voicemail. Yeah.
All right, go to our patreon.com/itscottstartrek. Pay us money for some similar nonsense like you just heard from Dan.
Send us in a voicemail.
And at It's Got Star Trek on all the social media. That's where you can find us, chat with us, have all sorts of fun. Definitely check us out at Blue Sky if you haven't followed us there yet. Blue Sky, Facebook, YouTube, all that jazz, Apple Podcasts, I don't know, whatever. You know, all the
voicemail things.
All right. Drum.
It's better now.
Drumhead next week. That does it for us this week. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
This isn't over.
You have sank my battleship.
The time is 0700 hours.
What? You're joking. Computer, confirm time.
The time is 0700 hours, 11 seconds.
Something tells me I'm gonna need a lot of Fractaginos today.